Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 5th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 55 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as one guest joins me on the program here today. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We'll do all 10 conference championship games and work in a handful of NFL games here on today's show, and that'll be it. That'll be your full show. I don't need to talk any longer about college football because we've gotten a lot of opinions here throughout the week from our various guests. Over at bangthebook.com, we got all these college football games previewed for you to go along with Danny Vorgs' NFL power ratings and model projections, daily NBA, college basketball, and NHL insights, including Parker Michaels' daily NHL piece. UFC preview up for this weekend. We'll have a bunch of stuff coming up here for the bowl season as well. Lots of things going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check them all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest, one segment here on this Thursday edition of the program. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
Matt, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. And you and I were talking a little bit before the show here that you kind of catch a little bit of a breather here with only the 10 college football games.
Yeah, after doing, you know, I think there were 64 last week, 64 down to 10. Yeah, you know, 50 less games. Yeah, I was able to sleep on a Tuesday night, the night before my newsletter deadline on Wednesday. First time I slept on a Tuesday night in about 13, 14 weeks.
There you go. Good for you, man. And, you know, with the bowl season being as spread out as it is, you know, different waves of activity, the early lines, the opening numbers getting hit. We will touch on that a little bit here later on in the segment. Just plant some early seeds here for our listeners with bowl lines coming out on Sunday. But first and foremost, I want to ask you about this. 10 conference championship games here this week. 5 of them are rematches. How much stock do you put in that first meeting?
I think, you know, boy, this is probably like a 1995 take. I mean, that's at least what the market, you know, sometimes thinks is, oh, it's tough to beat a team 2 times in 1 year, or there's value on the dog if they've already, you know, lost at that earlier meeting. And, you know, I'll give credit to, you know, Ralph Michaels, who's one of your guests on the show. He did the query on it, and the rematch games, it's right around 50% favorite or dog, whoever won the game. Where there is some money is, and people where you can maybe find some value is, one team is just superior to the other. So if the favorite won the first game and is favored in the rematch, the favorite's 19-2 straight up, and 13-7-1 against the spread. Again, that's another trend per Ralph Michaels. Did a good job there. To me, it makes sense that there's a narrative. It's tough to beat a team 2 times in 1 season, but the reality is the favorite, the dominant team, is better than that other, and maybe you're getting a little bit of value on the favorite because people are, you know, thinking, oh, the dog, I mean, they lost the first one. They'll play better this one. That's not the case, at least historically, since 1998.
Well, and especially, too, if you talk about the same team being favored, I mean, obviously, you know, there's potential home field advantage involved. You know, you've got some of these conference championship games that are on home fields, like Memphis, yeah, for example, also Boise State. But also, that team's favored for a variety of different reasons. Might be better players, might just be, you know, more talented team overall, might match up well schematically, may have a coaching advantage, too. So, yeah, there's no reason, and this is something that always gets me during college basketball conference tournaments. Oh, you can't beat a team 3 times in the same year. Why the hell not if you're better than they are?
Yeah. And we've seen that that's actually, there's value on that team that's won the first two, because conference championship week, all those people, we can't beat a team. It's tough to beat them 3 times. And there's value on the favorite. I don't have it in front of me, but I know guys that have done studies on it, and it's certainly, you know, it's not a 60% trend, but it's you're above water. You're above the juice level there. It's like in the 55% range.
All right, so let's dive into these games here for this weekend. Then we'll take a little bit of a look into the future here. But we start with game 103-104, Oregon and Utah. Utah up to a 6.5-point favorite market-wide. Total has completely cratered on this game from 51 to as low as 45.5 out there in the marketplace. These two teams did not play during the regular season. What do you think about Friday night's standalone game at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara?
I only got it at 5. I think you're paying a premium on Utah for two reasons. Number one, it's, you know, maybe you're not paying a premium because the team's just covered 8 in a row, but I do think maybe that they're a little expensive because it's a team that's covered 8 straight games. And the question you got to ask yourself is the market caught up to them yet or not? I don't think it's a heavy premium. I think on top of it, I mean, obviously they're in the playoff discussion and, you know, people are going to think, well, they got to get margin if they're going to get the into the playoffs. So I think that's why the line's sitting here at 6.5. And again, my power rank's closer to 5. You know, to me, it's about, you know, the weather would be number one. I mean, the expectation, 20-mile-an-hour winds, good chance of rain. And on top of it, what I thought made it even a better play is you already have a questionable playing surface there at Levi's Stadium. If you just – that's the home of the 49ers. If you just blindly had bet the under in every single San Francisco 49er game since they opened up this stadium 5 years ago, you are hitting 63%. Under 63%. Rain, wind. Yeah, under for me is the dominant factor. But if you're asking me, you know, how the two teams match up, I get it. Utah hasn't played a great schedule. But, man, what is their weakness? I mean, you go through, you know, defensively, they're top five in, you know, yards per game, points per game, yards per play. And then you look at some of their margins and, you know, overall. And this is, a legit top five, top seven caliber team. Oregon, to me, has shown weakness, including last week when they're playing a backup quarterback that they meandered through that game. Even though my power rankings say 5, I'm not lining up to bet the Ducks. I'm on the under.
Yeah, I think my number's 4.5 here on this game, but I will throw this out there, and this is very important, and again, a building block for 2020 for the listeners out there. Utah on the season, their yards per play differential between what they gain and what they allow, 2.71, one of the best in college football here this year. Oregon also really good, 1.73. Obviously not on par with Utah. I think there's kind of this perception out there that maybe Oregon's not a very good team. Statistically, they are a very good team. They've just had some issues closing out games. Maybe they haven't been as explosive offensively as we thought. Maybe it's Mario Cristobal holding them back during the game a little bit. But this is something for you to watch in the bowl season, and in particular next season, big yards per play differentials. If you've got one early in the week, the modelers, the quant guys are coming in on that side. In this case, it is Utah, almost a full yard per play diff better than Oregon. You can get some line value, get out in front of some line moves in that department. But in any event, with this game, like you said, maybe a little bit of a premium on Utah. I do think the weather conditions favor Utah more because they're more proficient running the football. The thing for me is this, and you and I were talking about this before we started recording here, you've got two top 10 defenses in red zone touchdown percentage against. This total's moved 5.5 points by and large because of the weather forecast. This thing may be a stone cold under no matter what.
Yeah, and I think at least, you know, the professionals are going to say, I can't bet this now. I mean, I didn't get it early in the week, and, you know, I can't take a bad number. You know, the data, and, you know, I'll give credit to Bet Labs, has a lot of good weather trends. Any game in college football with 12-mile-an-hour or more wins, you know, last 15 years has gone 57% towards the under. And again, we're talking 20-mile-an-hour wind plus rain here, plus a bad surface. So even against the closing line, 12-plus-mile-an-hour wins, 57% against the closer. Don't be afraid, because what I see is the market moves 3-4 points, and then really doesn't – it sits there until game day when people actually look up on the TV screen and see how bad the weather is. Then you get an additional movement. I mean, this to me sometimes is a 7-8-point factor, and yet most of the time I only see these totals moving 3-4 points.
Yeah, and then a couple quick notes to that. Obviously, you know, 6.5 in a low-scoring environment is a big number. So, yeah, you know, I would have to take Oregon here probably, if anything – I don't think I'm going to play the side in this one. Haven't decided if I want to take a 46 or something like that on the total, but one thing I will be hoping for on Friday night, I'm going to hope for a quick touchdown. I'm going to hope for some special teams thing, a kick return, maybe a pick six short field, something like that. Just something that gives me a little bit of live value to bet the under and maybe get some of that back that I lost with the line move.
I prefer no scoring.
That's fine.
Yeah, I've already bet it pre-flop. So, I mean, I hear you. I hear you, but I prefer none of that. I've had too many things go against me here. It's time. We're entering the new year here. It's time for some of the fortunes to start turning here.
All right, so we go to Saturday here where we go to Detroit, which is something that most people don't want to do all that often. Game 105-106 here, Miami of Ohio and Central Michigan. Central Michigan, 6.5-point favorite, painted across most of the market. There are some sevens out there. Total of 54 here for this one in the Motor City.
Yeah, I'm anxious to get your power rating on this one because we had a discrepancy on Central Michigan last week. I got it in the 4, so again, I'm light on Central. I think I kind of know why in this instance. I think the market's selling Miami a little too much here. I mean, they saw what happened last week. That was a give-up game for them. And they literally, I mean, they talked about Brett Gabbert, the quarterback, being injured first half. I mean, last week and did not play in the second half. I mean, from what I'm reading is he could have played. They just waved the white flag. And that's a big reason why they gave up the big lead against Ball State. And if you look at Chuck Martin, the head coach for Miami of Ohio, he's really treated the conference a lot differently than non-conference. I mean, they're one of the worst non-conference teams in the entire country, Miami, Ohio, the last 4 or 5 years. But once it gets to conference play, starting with that 1 year where they started 0-6 and then they went to 6-6, they've been really good in MAC play. Now, you know, I think you got to shade a little bit of home field advantage. Central Michigan will have the crowd edge here. Fast track, Central Michigan's got, you know, a Power 5 transfer at quarterback. I think Jim McElwain's really good, and he's showing it here that this is a guy that probably should be a Power 5 head coach and is sitting here in the MAC. I don't have a play. Even though my power ratings are strong in Miami of Ohio, Adam, I'm not lining up to bet them here. What I do lean with is the over. You look at Central Michigan's offense, that's where they've really done a lot of their improvement, and especially lately once they've gotten some consistency because they had a couple guys injured early in the season. I mean, they've been firing away. You know, the 40-plus points is nothing for them at this point. And I think the total here is a little bit short.
Yeah, I think so, too. My line on the game, pure power rating in a neutral setting is 6. But I gave Central Michigan a point for home field because, as you said, they will have the crowd edge, much shorter travel. So I've got this one 7 in my numbers. So I'm right there with the market, not going to have a play on this game. I think you're making a strong point about the over as well. And, you know, maybe Miami of Ohio's offense a little bit better than we thought, because like you said, they play the MAC schedule a little bit differently. They try to, you know, sort of shorten those games, a little bit of a running clock. You know, they don't have a lot of explosive plays in this game. Chuck Martin has to be perceptive enough to realize that they probably need some explosive plays here. Because if they want to go 3 yards in a cloud of dust, they're not keeping up with Central. So
they're not.
I think the over is probably the right call here from the total standpoint.
Yeah, and you got to get – I'm going to throw this out here because this is game 2 of the 10 games. You got to get a little – because I get it. They're isolated. Most of these games are isolated TV games. I don't know why the MAC didn't throw this on a Thursday night or something. I mean, how stupid is that? They got it going against 2 other conference championship games. I mean, who the hell is running that conference? I mean, I get this in an isolated TV window. Hell, if you got regular season games on Tuesday, why not play at least your championship game on a Thursday? You know, other than that soapbox treatment there, yeah, I think you got to get a little creative with your betting because there's only 10 games. And I'm not going to be sitting up here every game and saying high value pick on this side, high value pick on the other side. I mean, you got to start looking at, and you got to do this in any game throughout the course of the season, but I get it. People want to watch these games and they want to have a little bit on it. I think you got to go more derivative market. You got to go more totals market if you're looking to legitimately find some value here on conference championship week.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. One other thing I'll say here, maybe I can talk myself into Central Michigan at 6.5 because you've got a Miami of Ohio team here, 95th in the country in touchdown percentage in the red zone. Central Michigan, though, 121st defensively in touchdown percentage in the red zone. So which side, you know, winds up coming through here? Is it the Miami offense in the red zone, or does Central actually get some stops in the red zone? If you feel like they can get stops in the red zone, which they haven't done most of the year, they have the right type of offense to get some margin here. So,
yeah,
again, look a little bit deeper into this game. And as you said, you know, maybe team totals, a way to look here. Obviously, yep. Live betting, you know, because all of these numbers are within a point, point and a half of my line. So there's really not a whole lot of value here this week from a power rating standpoint. So like you said, you do have to get a little bit creative. And one more quick note before people from Detroit send me hate mail. I was just kidding about not wanting to go to Detroit. It's fine. It gets a bad rap. It's much like Cleveland. It's an okay place. I've been there before.
Cleveland's way better than Detroit. Downtown and stuff. Trust me.
Oh, I know. I'm just trying to be politically correct.
I mean, with all the arenas and stuff down there, if you're a sports fan, there's a couple of good sports bars down there. It's not bad. And I think if you're a Central Michigan fan, I mean, you're feeling pretty good. Spend the night in Detroit. At least you don't have to worry about the weather to watch the game. And I've watched these MAC championship games since they moved to Ford Field. And anytime a Western or a Central's in there, I mean, it is 3-1 crowd advantage for those Central and Western schools.
All right, our first rematch here that we're going to discuss, game 107-108, Louisiana and App State. App State was a 2.5-point dog in Lafayette during the regular season, came away with the outright win. I believe it was 17-7. It was supposed to be a barn burner offensively. I think the total was, 68 or 69, and it never came anywhere remotely close. App State opened as low as 3 in the offshore market, now 6, 6.5. That was not a good line at the outset.
No, very bad line. And I got it more in the 7, 7.5 range. So a little bit of overlay on the favorite here. I'm going with the under. And you mentioned, hey, the total was upper 60s in the first meeting, didn't come close. I mean, but now that's priced in effectively to the total at 56. Now I just think that's pretty much a season average. If you do the scoring for both teams, just doing a general basic handicap to look and average them out, you come right around 57 here. Here's what I do know. I mean, whatever it may be, and I think some of it is both teams like to run the ball and both teams have figured out how to defend it. In the last 2 years, this will be the fourth time these two teams have met. So there's a lot of familiarity. And we see that like NBA playoffs as the series goes along. A lot of people say it's tired, but I think a lot of it comes down to the teams are so familiar with one another that you see the totals in those series like drop 5, 6, 7 points throughout the course of it. I'm telling you, even though this total is lower than the first meeting, way lower, last three times these teams have played, the under is covered by 25 points per game the last couple of years. 3-0 to the under, 25 points per game. Both teams like to run the ball. Very, you know, high-intensity game. I think both teams, at least as far as a power rating goes, probably the best we've seen in the Sun Belt the last 5, 6, 7 years. I'm going with the under as the lean for me.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense here. Like you said, a lot of running of the football. App State is just, they're not an explosive passing team at all, and neither is Louisiana really here. So should be a running clock type of game. I do agree with the line move up. Like you, I've got this one in the 7 range. Maybe they didn't realize it was at Appalachian State. I don't really know. I'm not sure how you hang a number that bad 15 weeks into the season. I mean, who knows? Maybe App State.
It could be that. I mean, a lot of people say that's ridiculous. The market knows. And I'm telling you, sometimes we give way too much credit to the market, at least on an opener. Somebody could be sitting there asleep on that and making a legit mistake. It happens. So, I mean, let's not give some of these guys too much credit. I mean, I've talked to some of these sportsbook directors, and I'm not saying, you know, they're, I'm not going to use the word dumb, but let's just say they're not always, when it comes to lower level college football or college basketball, the sharpest tools in the shed.
And I think this is one of those games too. And I talked about this both on a video over on our Bang the Book YouTube page and also the week of the game here on the show. When Louisiana was taking all that money against App State and they were getting all that love and they have a very proficient running game, it was almost one of those handicaps to me that was see it. I think this is one of those games that sets up kind of the same way. This line is obviously well adjusted from the first meeting, But that's kind of the thing for me. Until someone dethrones App State,
yeah,
they've got my utmost confidence.
And I'll tell you who has indeed dethroned them. It's UL Lafayette, who's 0-7 against App State since App State joined the Sun Belt back in 2014. I mean, App State's beaten them by 21 points per game, covered by 9 points per game. So there has been a matchup issue between the two programs.
All right, so we go to game 109-110, Baylor and Oklahoma. Another one here, very adjusted line from the first meeting when Oklahoma was laying double digits on the road in Waco. Now in the neutral setting of Arlington, pretty much 9 market wide. This one has gone up a little bit since yesterday when I was taking a look at it. Oklahoma, again, a 9-point favorite, total up from 61 to 64.5. What do you think about the Big 12 title game?
I got it at 10. And I did give Oklahoma a little bit just because they've been there, done that. I mean, this is their 4th straight year they're playing here since they returned to Big 12 title game. And, you know, Baylor's never been in the Big 12 title game. So I think there should be a little bit of that. I think there's a little bit of value in Oklahoma. I think people, they overreacted. Oh, Oklahoma had to rally from a 25-point deficit in that game. I mean, they should have lost that game. And really, if you take that out of the equation and just look at the box score, Oklahoma dominated that game. And not only, you know, they dominated a game without one of their best players, CD Lamb, the All-American wide receiver, easily top 5 wide receiver in the country, didn't play. He's playing here. And on top of it, if you just do the comparison statistically throughout the course of the season in conference play, Oklahoma's like plus 200 yards per game in conference. Baylor's like plus in the 50 range. So I do think there's some value on Oklahoma. Been there, done that. It'll be interesting to see. Because the Pac-12 title games, obviously the night before, if Utah crushes Oregon, I mean, some people are going to say, well, Oklahoma, that's going to incentivize Oklahoma to get margin. But you know, to me, I'm like, I don't know. If Utah's already ranked ahead of Oklahoma and Utah gets a huge dominant win, you know, what's Oklahoma feeling as far as chances to get to the playoffs? There's a lot of, you know, kind of circumstances that aren't going to be always factored in the line here. I would at least keep an eye on the Pac-12 title game, because say Utah loses, then I think winner here is going, you know, most likely, depending on what happens in the SEC title game, to the playoff. And I think that can make both teams tight. I would actually look more towards the under if Utah loses on the Friday night before.
The one thing I will say about the first meeting, Baylor had 5.9 yards per play to Oklahoma's 5.5. The difference is Oklahoma ran 95 plays and Baylor ran 52. Baylor could not get off the field. Oklahoma, 12 of 18 on third down, converted their only fourth down attempt. So this is a hard game to handicap to me, because Baylor got gifted some points in the first half. Oklahoma plays one good half and one bad half virtually every game. You don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how they've been all year long. So Baylor did hold them down from an explosiveness standpoint. Jalen Hurts, 27 carries in that game. That's not really a recipe for success for Oklahoma. But as you said, they didn't have CeeDee Lamb, who's their big home run hitter, their explosive play threat. This is a tough handicap, I think, in a lot of different ways, because I love Matt Rhule. I think everybody loves Matt Rhule. This is one where maybe that second meeting, he is able to make some adjustments. On the other hand, Baylor does not have the talent nor the speed to hang with Oklahoma again. So what do you value here in this game the most? To me, I'd take Oklahoma if I had to. My line's right there at 9. But, man, there's a lot to unpack about this one handicap.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack about a lot of these conference championship handicaps here. They're a little complicated. And, you know, and the good thing is you got time at least. This week with only 10 games, you can start unpacking it. If it was a normal week, you got a very complicated handicap. It's normally next as far as the rotation goes, because you're so limited in time with 50, 55, 60 games on the card. But again, it's not a high value pick. I might talk with confidence here, but again, as confident as I am on Oklahoma, how wrong is the line? I'm saying it's maybe wrong by a point here. And that point for me is more of the experience factor, and which doesn't necessarily always get factored into a line on a game where I'm just giving Oklahoma, been there, done that, an extra half point to three quarters of a point.
Yeah, and I'll add one more layer to this. Baylor, when they played Oklahoma coming off that 3 overtime game against TCU, Baylor this time around coming off of decimating Kansas last week. So this is probably, you know, and I talked about this at the end of yesterday's segment. And I think it's an important point to make here too. All these games are on TV. All these games are spotlight games. We're going to be paying attention to all of them. It sure as hell doesn't mean you have to bet all of them.
Huh. Yeah, I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, you can, but I mean, recreational, true, have some fun, pizza money. But a lot of listeners, that's what they're betting, and nothing against that. I mean, I get it. You're good. A lot of good, hardworking people. 25, 30, 40 bucks is a legitimate bet for some, but be very careful. Because what I'll say is this, if you're normally betting five college football games a week when there's 50 plus games to choose from, there's only 10 this week. Not saying you can't find value in two or three, but be very careful in betting 5 out of 10 as compared to a normal week where you're betting 5 out of 55.
So we jump to the Conference USA title game here. 111-112, UAB, Florida Atlantic. We have not talked about this game at all on the show this week as of yet. Florida Atlantic, 7.5-point favorite here. Total 49.5 for this one. These two teams did not play during the regular season. Everything came down to the last week of the regular season before we figured out what this game was actually going to be here. Winds up in Boca with FAU more than a touchdown favorite.
Yeah, this is my biggest overlay. This was, you know, by far the biggest one. I got, like, Florida Atlantic 11 here. And my only hang-up is I'm worried about Lane Kiffin being distracted. If he's locked and ready to go, this would be my favorite side pick for the week on FAU. I think UAB's overrated. Why? They played by far the weakest schedule in college football. The weakest. 130 out of 130. And UAB, generally speaking, is a much different team away from home than they are at home. They haven't lost a home game in 3 years. They're basically 500 on the road. So, I mean, 500, okay. I mean, when you're a good team, I get that. But there is a big disparity there. And another factor for me, turnovers. A lot of people, and I agree with it, turnovers are mostly random, with, in my opinion, the exception of interceptions, because sometimes interceptions comes down to how skilled you are at quarterback. And the UAB quarterback, I don't care who it is, if it's Johnson, the regular starter, or his replacement. UAB, 17 interceptions this year, second most in the country. What does FAU do really well on defense? 19 interceptions. FAU has more interceptions than any other team in the country. So I got a team that throws the second most, and I got a team that intercepts the most. And on top of it, Lane Kiffin, again, if he's locked and ready, he's not afraid to run it up. All 9 of FAU's wins this year have come by double digits. This is my favorite side play of the week. I'd be a big bet for me if I just could trust Lane Kiffin that he hasn't been, you know, interviewing for multiple jobs this week and he's not distracted.
That's a difficult question for both sides here in this game, because the job that Bill Clark has done at UAB has been exceptional. To rebuild this program, to infuse this level of talent, he's getting a lot of sniffs from a lot of athletic departments around the country too. We know Kiffin is. I know we've seen Arkansas is kind of interested in him. That's been kind of the big story here so far. That is a tough thing and kind of an unknown here a little bit about this handicap. A couple things for me. One, my line is 6.5. So you and I are very different on this game. Well, we talked about this a little bit with UAB a few weeks ago. Maybe it was even last week. I gave them a lot of respect because they weren't good offensively against Tennessee, but they did hold Tennessee down on defense, which is what UAB has done all year long. So I do respect that. What I don't respect is I don't even know who's starting at quarterback here for them. Tyler Johnson's been hurt all year long, didn't play last week, still got the win that they needed. UAB may not score much in this game. And FAU is a very different team than they used to be. They're not as explosive on offense, but defensively, they're stouter than they used to be. So maybe I just have this game power rated inaccurately. I'm not going to take UAB. I'm going to respect your opinion here with the Florida Atlantic side. If I had to play it, I would go that way, but not a game that I'll probably end up on. But it sounds like you've got, like you said, your strongest side play of the week here.
I do, and I do think there's going to be a, and it might be a little on the square side, because if people are going to be betting it, I'm guessing they're going to take the favorite. They're going to take the known commodity, which is Lane Kiffin. And I think, you know, the sharper squares are going to be on UAB. I'll say that. And the fact that, they at least are aware of Bill Clark, because he's gotten some play nationally the last couple of years. And then on top of that, you're going to say, boy, I'm going to take the hook here with a really good defense in UAB. I'm going to argue, I get it, Tennessee, but Tennessee's not setting the world on fire offensively. They're averaging like 22 points per game, so how good was it? But UAB's defense looks great because they haven't played anybody. And keep in mind that the best offense they could have faced in conference play was Louisiana Tech, but Louisiana Tech that game didn't have their starting quarterback and their starting wide receiver.
No, those are all fair points. And also something, too, something I've been hearing a lot in the NFL here is that, you know, defensive stats, defensive metrics are more of a byproduct of who you play as opposed to the true talent level of your defense. And maybe that's the case here for UAB.
Yeah, a.k.a. the New England Patriots.
Right. And UAB, I mean, yeah, they're fifth in yards per play allowed. The teams ahead of them, Utah, Georgia, Clemson, and Ohio State. But, you know, UAB has played nowhere near the schedule of anybody that's around them in that yards per play allowed department. So, hey, you know what? I mean, like I said, I will defer to you here on that one. And when we reconvene next Thursday, we'll see what winds up happening in that game. How about this one? 113-114, Cincinnati and Memphis. Memphis, 9.5-point favorite, though we are seeing some 8.5s at Pinnacle and Matchbook. Kind of intriguing as those are two of the sharper offshores. Obviously, last week, these two teams just played. Memphis, a 14-point favorite, failed to cover. Cincinnati going back to Desmond Ridder here this week at quarterback. What do you think here in this AAC rematch, Brad?
I had Memphis last week and couldn't have been more disappointed. I mean, the fact that since he had a backup quarterback, the fact that the game meant so much more to Memphis, the fact that Memphis jumped out 17-3, I got to be honest with you. I thought at that point it was Katie bar the door. I'm going to get a nice winner. Not so much indigestion after Thanksgiving. It's going to be a nice Friday for old Brad Powers. And in the final three quarters of that game, Cincinnati, to me, was the better team. So kudos, Luke Fickell. Great coaching job. There was no give up there. You know, I got to wonder, and here's another Ralph Michaels stat. He did a really good job on this week. And there's only been three times that teams have played each other in back-to-back games. So back-to-back weeks in college football, the same two teams are playing. The dog in the second game is 3-0 against the spread. So that's pretty impressive there. But to be perfectly frank with you, I'm not sure going back to Desmond Ridder is a great thing. And is he fully healthy? Because this is a guy that was dealing with shoulder issues prior. Ben Bryant, to me, had a stronger arm, but he did also turn the football over three times. So, I mean, this is how much Cincinnati, in my opinion, impressed. I mean, Cincinnati had three turnovers and gave up a kick return touchdown the first play of the game and still covered last week. I don't have really a big bet here for me. My line's 9. That's right around where market is, even though some of the sharper books are less than that. This is one where I'm just going to sit back and maybe get involved after the game starts.
I think I'm going to wind up on Memphis here this week. I've got this one 11.5, and there are a couple of different schools of thought from last week's game. You know, like you said, that game meant more to Memphis because they had to win the division, and also now they're in the driver's seat for the New Year's Six Group of Five berth. If they win this one, they should wind up getting it. The thing for me is this. They're up 17-3. Is it fair to say that they kind of packed it away a little bit themselves? They did flirt with fire in this game, and Cincinnati had two very long 80, you know, double-digit play drives in the second quarter that really took up a big chunk of that period. But I wonder if Memphis didn't show everything either. You know, you get up 7-0 with the kick return. You wind up taking a 17-3 lead in the second quarter. You make the plays you need to in the fourth quarter. Brady White only throws 26 times. 233 yards on 15 completions. Kenneth Gainwell only carries 15 times. That's a relatively low workload for him. I can't help but wonder if Memphis didn't show a whole lot either. If they went, you know what, let's win this game. Who cares by how much? We're saving some things in the playbook. We're saving some of our exotic blitz looks. We're saving some of our, you know, maybe gadget plays on offense or some of our, you know, most effective red zone plays. I can't help but wonder if Memphis did that last week. These are two very well-coached teams. I like Mike Norvell a lot. I like Luke Fickell a lot. I just think Memphis is the all-around better team. Keep in mind here, Cincinnati has now been outgained in 7 of the last 8 games. They've won 6 of them. The only game where they outgained the opposition, UConn, who absolutely blows. I think Memphis wins this game and does so comfortably.
There you go. It sounds like that's going to be on the Golden Nugget card, sounds like.
Especially with Ridder back, because I agree with you. I don't think that's the right move. He can't possibly be healthy, you know, after a week off, after all the talk about him and his performance late in the regular season.
And I'll say this, if you do believe that teams, you know, Memphis particularly was holding back, and we can argue if Cincy was or not, do we go over? Because when teams are vanilla, yeah, a.k.a., you know, NFL preseason, we see those totals lines. I mean, we got a total here sitting, you know, in line with at least what the score was in last week's game. Do we go over?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a real good question. Doesn't look like weather is going to be too much of a factor in Memphis this week either. So, you know, not necessarily a bad idea there. How about game 115-116, where a lot of people are going to be interested in the over? Hawaii and Boise State. Boise State, 13.5-point favorite. Total on the rise a little bit, 64.5, a stray 65 out there. The first meeting had a whole hell of a lot of points to it. What about this one this time around on the Smurf turf?
Yeah, my number's 14, so again, not a high-value pick. If you ask me what would you prefer to bet, I'd probably be Boise State. I went against Hawaii pretty big the last couple weeks and come up short, so I'm in no need to go 3 for 3 in this instance because I was way wrong on both of those. I would be square two and lean with the over. I just matchup-wise, I don't see Hawaii defending Boise State. You look at Boise State at quarterback, you know, Jalen Henderson's been okay for him. Now, I mean, Bachmeyer's out again, but Henderson, to me, at this point, it doesn't move the needle for me. He's got 9 touchdowns, one interception. He's played several games in a row, so no major downgrade for me there at quarterback for Boise State. And, you know, Hawaii, it doesn't matter who's the quarterback there. I mean, I'm guessing with Cordero banged up a little bit, they'll go with McDonald. I mean, the guy that's, you know, has a majority of the snaps the last couple of years. I do like the fact that Hawaii's been there, done that, as far as they've seen the blue turf. But I think 14 is a really fair number, but if push comes to shove, if it's entertainment bets for me and it's $20 pizza money, I'm going favorite and over here. I'll be square.
Yeah, my line's 13.5, and I'll be totally honest with you. Even with that 28-point spread in the ACC title game, this is the least intriguing conference championship game to me. I'm just – nothing excites me about this game. You know, I feel like I've kind of seen this movie before where Boise State, you know, does wind up playing very well in the tail end of the regular season on into the conference championship game, and they throw a scare into some really good Power 5 team in a bowl. That's almost, you know, it's almost like Groundhog Day for this team. They're not going to lose. They probably win by 14 or 17 or something like that. Probably falls somewhere near the number. Probably falls somewhere near the total. I don't see anything that excites me either way about this game. And given the other games that it's going up against, Georgia, LSU, and Cincinnati, Memphis, I probably won't even pay too much attention to this one. No offense to either team.
Agree. And I think it's intriguing that the two teams that, you know, or at least I guess since he's out, but the two teams that have the best chance to get that group of five bid are playing at exactly the same time. What would have been interesting to me is if we had those games, those championship games stacked where one was before the other, then I could handicap some motivation depending. I mean, if Memphis wins, they're in as far as the group of five. But if Memphis, like, say, played an earlier time slot and lost, to me, that incentivizes Boise State. Hey, we win this game, we're going to the Cotton Bowl.
Right. No, that's an excellent point. And I kind of mentioned that a little bit. You know, maybe Boise State finds out something at halftime about what Memphis is doing. Maybe you find a second half play on that game, something like that. But overall, just not a real attractive game there in the Mountain West. Game 117-118 is very attractive. Georgia and LSU. LSU touchdown favorite. Most of the 7.5s are off the board now. Total anywhere from 54 to 55.5, depending on the juice you want to lay. I mean, look, this game means everything to Georgia. Not as much to LSU, but obviously they still want to win the SEC. What do you think here, man?
I'm on Georgia. I mean, I get it. The injuries are an issue. Cager out for the year. I mean, he's their top wide receiver, the second wide receiver suspended the first half. Top running backs, you know, banged up a little bit. Looks like he'll play, but it could be ineffective. I mean, offensively, Georgia's been a mess already, you know, notwithstanding the injuries. But I'm just going to, again, and this is going to sound like a broken record, been there, done that. I mean, Georgia's, this will be the fourth time they played in this facility the last couple of years. LSU's never played here. Georgia, in my opinion, has got the better defense with some margin, although I'm a little scared. I mean, I'm hoping not to see the LSU defense from last week. I'm hoping it's the LSU defense from a majority of the season. I think Georgia at least has the advantage at the line of scrimmage. I'll take Georgia here. I mean, I even factoring in the injuries to my power ratings, and I downgraded Georgia about a point. I only got about 5.5 here is my line. So I'll take the 7, and I have bet the 7 on Georgia.
Pure power rating is 6 for me. I'm giving Georgia a point for home field. They're in Atlanta. Again, like you mentioned, familiarity with the venue, and maybe that's even a little bit low in terms of home field advantage. So in that respect, I do have Georgia, you know, in the plus 5 range here. So a little bit of an overlay, but a couple of burning questions for me. One, I don't like this Georgia offense. They cannot spread the field well enough. LSU, they have some issues on defense, certainly has issues defending the run, giving up 4.3 yards per carry in SEC play. If Georgia can run the football, control the line of scrimmage, keep LSU off the field, they got a good chance at covering 7. If they can't, find me a passing attack worth really anything that Georgia's faced this season. Florida with Kyle Trask, maybe. Kyle Trask has played very well this year. They're not nearly as explosive as LSU. Kentucky can't throw a forward pass. You know, Missouri didn't have Kelly Bryant, who wasn't very good anyway. Ian Book is okay. He's not bad. Georgia hasn't seen this. And I mean, few teams have a passing attack like LSU, but I'm curious how they defend it. You know, we know Georgia's stats are very good. What do they look like facing a premier offense? We don't know that yet. So there are way too many questions for me to play this game. I'll obviously be very interested in it, but I don't think I'm going to have a bet on side or total here because I think there are too many what ifs that affect, you know, both varieties of bets.
I agree with you. It's tough. I mean, I did take a stand on Georgia early in the week, but I mean, it is a concern that LSU without 7? A shadow of a doubt is the best offense they've seen.
Did you get 7 on that one?
I did get 7. I thought it won't. It's not gonna go to 7.5. It goes
were
to 7.5.
So stations and all them had 7.5 out there then?
Oh, I mean, obviously, I'm not saying I bet 7 when there were 7.5 available. I'm saying on Sunday when Circa had 7, I'm like, I think that's a little steep. I think that line closes 6.5. And I still think there's a good chance it closes at 6.5. I did not expect it to go 7.5, so I took a bad number.
No, it's not a bad number. I mean, it's, you know, the consensus number that's out there for the most part, but I agree with you. I think there's a very good chance this does close 6.5 because this probably ends up a little bit of a sharp versus public split because I've seen people talking for 4 or 5 weeks now about Georgia beating LSU. You know, some people that I respect, some very smart people out there that really do like this matchup for Georgia because you can run the football on LSU's defense. So I do think
the DeAndre Swift thing threw me. I was unaware of the severity of his injury when I made the bet. That really threw me because I did think, hey, Georgia's going to run the football on LSU. And I do – look, it does swing both ways. I do think Georgia legitimately is probably the best defense LSU's faced, or at least they're as good as Auburn, and Auburn slowed down that LSU offense. I mean, LSU moved up and down the field, but they only put 23 points on the board.
Well, and that's a big thing, too, and I kind of mentioned that a little bit, that, you know, Georgia's a very good red zone defense, and that was something that really helped Auburn keep that game close. They got badly outplayed, but LSU wasn't as potent in the red zone, and Georgia's 5th in touchdown percentage against in the red zone, and in fact, in their 12 games, they've only allowed 21 red zone attempts. So, you know, there's a lot of intrigue to this game. So here's my question. I mean, obviously, you've got this position on Georgia. If it goes 6.5, are you going to buy off a little bit of it, taking LSU the other way, or are you just going to let Georgia
buy? Great call. Yeah, I will a little bit because, you know, I bet a dime. I mean, it's a fair bet for me. It's not a, you know, huge, like, ooh, I'm really sweating it. But, yeah, I'll take a piece, probably 30% or so on LSU.
And that's important. You know, that's a bankroll management thing. We talk about the difference between handicapping and betting. I mean, if you bet a position early in the week because you think, you know, X, Y, and Z, or you handicap the game more and something's a little bit different, don't lose a full unit on it. And if the line moves down, you can get a better price. Go ahead and buy off of some of it.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, don't take away your initial position that you liked, but, you know, maybe cut your potential loss a little bit. You know, over the course of a season, you know, you never want to do that. You don't want to backtrack on a play that you liked, but over the course of the season, if you can lose, you know, half of a unit because you played back at it a little bit, that's going to help you in the long run.
Yeah, especially if you're just playing a pure number base. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's you know, a fine line that you run between being a better and a handicapper. There's two major differences in that regard. A handicapper, you can never give out one side and say, oh, I like the other side. You just can't do that. I mean, that's what a lot of, you know, the old time boiler room guys, you know, scumbags would do. But, you know, give out, you know, half the clients want the one side and the other half the other side. And therefore, that they lock themselves into a winner. They're at least half their clients won. I mean, you can't do that in today's day and age. But if you are a better, completely, all bets. I mean, it's, you know, quote unquote, all bets are. I mean, you take a position because of a number. The number moves, and you can get off of it a little bit, or do a little bit of hedging. Certainly, I mean, bankroll management. That's the way to go.
And obviously, it's a small possibility, but you know, the golden ticket here is it lands seven, and you push the original bet and catch LSU. I mean, there is a chance, a non-zero chance that happens. So
yeah, but I'd prefer just Georgia to cover. Yeah, I came out pretty strong on Georgia. I like my initial gut to be right.
Well, fair enough. We'll see what happens there in that SEC title game. Couple of big spreads here left to talk about. 119-120 in Indianapolis. Wisconsin, Ohio State. Ohio State, anywhere from 15.5 to 17 out there in the offshore, depending on where you look. Total shot up for this one. 52.5 to as high as 57 out there in the market. What do you think about this rematch where these two teams, at least Wisconsin, it looks a little bit different since the first meeting?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the total move. I thought that, you're talking about bad numbers, I think that was one that was a little light. I certainly lean over. Fast track, to me, favors the Buckeyes. Keep in mind the earlier game was played in a little bit of weather, rain and wind. I'm not fading Ohio State at this point, even though pure power rating for me has it like 15.5. I'm just, if it went to 17.5, of course, then I'd take a position on Wisconsin. But I'm kind of in no man's land here. You know, 16. It's, you know, how many games fall 16 in college football? Not many. I do lean over because Wisconsin showed me a little bit offensively last week. They threw the football with Jack Cohn a little bit. And I think, you know, the question I have with the Buckeyes is how many times are you going to get up? You got up for Penn State. You got up for Michigan. And maybe just Ohio State is that damn good than the rest of college football. But to me, if you're a little lax, I think sometimes it shows up on the defensive side of the ball. So over's the you know, the play for me. But just the lean, it's not a big bet.
Yeah, I got this one 17, giving Ohio State 1.5 of home field because short trip from Columbus.
Oh, wow, really?
Well, it's a short trip from Columbus, and everything is an Ohio State home game now. I mean, you heard them last night at the Dean Dome, right? That's in basketball. The OHIO chant was going around the Dean Dome last night, playing North Carolina on the road. Everything's a home game for Ohio State now. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. So I give them 1.5 here. It's a much shorter trip from Columbus to Madison. Also, I mean, Ohio State's been very good in that building. But here's the thing for me. Initially, I wanted to play the under here because you've got a Justin Fields with a sprained MCL wearing the brace. They're not going to put him at risk here in this game. But then as the week went along, Jeff Hafley and Al Washington, maybe a package deal going over to Boston College. Both of those guys, you got a co-defensive coordinator and a linebackers coach. So they obviously have some stuff going on, some distractions. Not particularly good for your front seven going up against Wisconsin. So I like the under. I may come back on the under when this thing finally peaks. But right now, I've softened my stance a little bit on it. I think Ohio State runs the football a lot. We know Wisconsin runs the football a lot. I think Ohio State just wants to get out. I don't think they care about margin. Yeah, they'd like to be number one and avoid Clemson in the semifinal. But if they win, they do that anyway. So,
oh, you really think so?
How badly does Georgia have to beat LSU?
You mean LSU beat Georgia?
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, if they beat them by 14+, I mean, I think it's going to be tight.
But you have to send Ohio State to Arizona, right?
Yeah.
So they'd have to be number one, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. Wait, Fiesta always gets one. I thought it was geographically, it's, you know, whatever preferred for the number one team.
Oh, maybe it is. Well, I guess we'll find out. I'm not sure. I guess that's something I have to look into. But
yeah, I don't know if Ohio State want to, if they're playing a Utah, because I think it is the one team's choice. I think it's the school's choice. Whoever's won, because I remember, you know, Dabo, like him explaining why he picked certain places in the past, and I'm pretty sure it'll be Ohio State's choice. And if it's Utah, do you want to play in the Fiesta, or would you make Utah travel across the country and play in the South?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a real good question. I guess that's something we'll have to kind of look into here a little bit. But speaking of Dabo and his Clemson Tigers, quit effing whining, Dabo. My God, man. Do you really need to prop your team up that much? Look, I love the guy. I think he's a great head coach. I think he's a very good motivator. But for God's sake, man, quit crying poor about your team. The ACC sucks. Get over it. You're a 28-point favorite in your conference championship game. I'm tired of hearing him complain about everything. Probably won't have much to complain about here this week because his team's going to win. Just a matter of how much they do it by.
I'm opposite. I'm fine with him. I do think Clemson's been a little shafted, I should say, in a little bit, because here's the defending national champs. I get it, they haven't played anybody, but you can only play the teams on your schedule. And the fact that you're the defending national champ and you're two field goals away from being 11-1 against the spread, I think there has been too much of an overreaction. I think he's a little, upset about, I think a majority of the people on the street haven't watched a lot of Clemson football this year. They don't watch blowouts, so people just don't watch that. And I think, 75% of the people on the street are going to talk, what's your lasting impression on Clemson? Oh, they almost lost to North Carolina. I don't think they're as good as, last year's team. When in reality, I have Clemson power rated up since the start of the season. I get the disrespect. I mean, that's just who he is. He's going to play the disrespect card. I mean, Clemson's now number one in yards per game margin, number one in yards per play margin on the season. Trevor Lawrence hasn't thrown an interception in five straight games. Clemson's the first defense since 1996 to hold all 12 opponents to less than 300 yards. I get it. They haven't played anybody. ACC's a joke, but they made it out to be a joke because they're just clear-cut better than everybody else. With that being said, this line's about fair. I think I got it at, 27. I do not want to bet Virginia here. It's a game. I'll be watching the Big Ten championship game instead.
Yeah, I mean, I have this one 27 on a neutral as well. I did give Clemson 2 points for home field proximity to Charlotte, and they've known all year long they were going to this game. So their fans are going to show up in Charlotte. I mean, look, if that's Dabo's way of motivating his team to not have any kind of letdown, whatever. Okay, fine. But, I don't know. Crying about being, where you're ranked in the college football playoff rankings and this and that, I mean, is it their fault?
I think it's legit to cry because, I mean, the difference between 1 and 2 and 3 is, going to be significant. To get that number one seed, it's like almost getting a bye. No disrespect to Utah or Oklahoma, but we're talking that, if Ohio State gets the one seed, I mean, they are near 2-touchdown favorite over those two teams. But if they fall to 2.5 to play at Clemson, that semifinal is an absolute war, no matter if it's Clemson, LSU, or Ohio State Clemson.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I understand that point. But also, I mean, is it Clemson's fault that Florida State fell off? No. Is it Clemson's fault that, Texas A&M wasn't great? No. But at the same time, you have to have something in place to reward the teams that, have actually gotten to this point playing against somebody. And right now, that is the number one seed because you do not want LSU or Clemson in that 2-3 game if you're Ohio State. So I guess we'll see how it all shakes out here. But, we ran really long on these conference championship games. So I want to just ask real quickly here, with the bowl lines coming out here on Sunday night, what are some of the initial things that you're kind of looking for?
Motivation. I mean, I'm going to circle the teams that I think have questionable motivation already going in. I'm looking for, it's something you got to make some quick decisions because Circa's probably going to put them out quickly. Also travel, distance, fans, because so many times, you're going to get instances where it's 3-4 to 1 crowd advantage for teams. So you got to think about travel issues for teams, motivation and travel issues, that thing or two matchup. Quickly, I'll try to have an Excel spreadsheet. A lot of times, the strength of schedule disparities. When teams are playing a bunch of the same opponents in conference, a lot of times you're going to have similar strength of schedules. Come bowl season, you're going to get teams that have played the 30th toughest schedule, and then you're going to get the other team playing the 110th toughest schedule. That doesn't always get factored appropriately in the line. A lot of moving factors, a lot of moving variables, but let's just put it this way. I think bowl season is my favorite time of the year to make some money. I'm pretty confident in my ability to make money in bowl season more than any other time during the season in college football outside of those opening season win totals and opening game of the year lines in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll echo everything you said. I'll throw out again something I mentioned earlier on in the show, the yards per play differential. You're going to get the modelers that play on that with these opening lines. So that's something you want to pay attention to. And then also, too, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a blind fade necessarily, but I would expect money to come in against every MAC team on the openers.
Yeah.
You know, the AAC struggled out of conference a little bit, especially when they played Power 5 this year. So if you get any of those types of meetings, that's something where you may see some line movement too. Conference perception also plays a pretty big role in the line movements.
Pac-12 has been horrible in bowl games last 3-4 years. They'll take money against them. Even though I think the Pac-12's overachieved this year. So we'll see. Maybe there'll be some value, not at the opener, but all that anti-Pac-12 sentiment that'll be there. I think I'll talk myself into playing on a few Pac-12 teams come later, you know, because we got a couple weeks here. Let the line settle a little bit, and I got an inkling that I'll find maybe some value on Pac-12 teams. Particularly, here's one team I'm going to tell you I'm going to bet on. I don't care who they're playing. Washington. Two factors. Obviously, last game for Peterson, so I think they'll be up for it. And then the fact that they already have their coach in place, he's already part of that staff. There's going to be no loafing in any of those bowl practices leading up to it. And I already think Washington's underrated to begin with. Washington is a team I'm looking to bet.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's a very good one to isolate here. And again, keep in mind, there will be a lot of coaching changes throughout the bowl period, interims, all that type of stuff. We'll cover it all, excuse me, here on the show. And also cover the interims over at bangthebook.com. Brent, let's spend a few quick minutes on the NFL here. I apologize we ran so long with the college side of things. Game 135-136, Denver and Houston's kind of interesting. Denver gets that win with Drew Lock. Houston, of course, a very emotional win for Bill O'Brien over the Patriots. A big win for that team, too, in terms of the playoff picture. And here they are laying 9 this week at home against Denver. Houston's obviously clearly the better team, but is the spot enough to maybe take the Broncos here?
Yeah, I think it is, but I'd look more Denver first half because I'm not sure I can trust Drew Lock, and we saw him in the second half last week only throw for 11 yards. So full game, I get a little concerned with Drew Lock, the new Denver quarterback. So if it is a little bit of a flat spot and you got a really good defense in Denver, I think take the Broncos more first half and you know maybe sprinkle a little bit on the money line. Plus, I think 240 or around that you can find. First half, Denver.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a good look there. How about the marquee game here this week? 137-138, San Francisco and New Orleans. New Orleans now a 2.5-point favorite. Very interesting to see this one blow right through the key number of 3 early on in the week. It was even 3.5. Now it's 2.5. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't agree with it. I mean, that worries me because you got to that's got to be respected money blowing right through in a big game. But, I mean, how is this spot good for San Fran? I mean, you start looking at their schedule last 5-6 weeks. They've been through a lot, including last week, an absolute war on the road against Baltimore. And they're now across the country again on the road. And I got a trend for you here, and this is remarkable. The Saints at home, 14-1 against the spread against teams that have a winning percentage of 800 or better. So we're talking elite teams, 80%+ winning percentage. Last 15 times the Saints have been at home, they're 14-1 against the number.
Wow, that is damn impressive. And I like New Orleans here, too. I disagree with this line move. I mean, I guess I get it in the sense that San Francisco looks really good statistically, and maybe they match up pretty well against New Orleans. They are staying in Florida this week, which, you know, not a bad place to be in the winter.
Good call there. I did not know that.
But that being said, you know, that's still 2 weeks away from home, and New Orleans, a very, very good team in the Dome for a lot of reasons, including the one that you just mentioned. And San Francisco's bye was week 4. Again, like you said, how many times can you keep getting up for these games? New Orleans has had a much lighter schedule of late, had a late bye week. Maybe they haven't been as great since the bye week, but I just wonder what the gas tank looks like for San Francisco, because when they go back home, they're going to be on fumes.
Yeah, and maybe the big play will be against them next week and not necessarily this game.
Yeah, I think I'm still going to take a shot against them here. I think New Orleans will be on my super contest card, especially 2.5. But, yeah, I agree. That could be an interesting one there. Colts and Bucks, game we haven't talked about yet here this week. Colts down from 3.5 to 3. I can't back Tampa Bay because I can't trust Jameis Winston. But if you've been backing Tampa Bay, you've been doing pretty well here of late.
Yeah, last couple games, they've certainly been good. I'm going to take Indy. I took them last week. Oh, my goodness. And line went against me big time. But still, 6 minutes left. That's a 17-17 game. You got a 10-point play. Whenever I see those big 10-point swings, in that particular instance is a blocked field goal return for a touchdown by Tennessee, it's almost an auto play on me because so many people, the public, so heavily involved in the NFL, and they're such a prisoner of final scores. I mean, Indy did have the yardage edge against Tennessee by about 100 yards in that game. I think there's some value here on the Colts. I like the Colts.
All right, let's hurry up here. 151-152, Chiefs and Patriots. New England 3-point home favorite here against Andy Reid. Big performance off the bye for Kansas City. New England kind of faltering here. Do they circle the wagons and rally, or does this, you know, sort of tailspin continue?
Yeah. Oof. I like New England, and this is going to be square. I got to go with the history. I mean, off a loss, they're 41-21 against the spread since 2002. They've won 21 straight home games. Only one of those have come by less than 4 points. It was against the Chiefs last year by 3. I mean, coming off 2 straight non-covers, the Patriots are 17-5 ATS, but they're covering by 13 points per game. So when they fail to meet expectations, 2 straight games, that third game, it's usually a good sign. That I got that and that alone, I got to take the Patriots. But this, I mean, keep in mind, you got to ask yourself this. Look at this total. This total is right around 49. You got a 3-point spread, so that's real easy to do the math. I mean, right now, Vegas is expecting the game to be 26-23. Do you trust the New England defense to hold KC to 23? A KC that's only been held under, like, you know, to that number one time the last 2 years with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback? Ooh. I mean, I'm going to certainly lean New England. If they're going to win it, I think it's going to be a higher scoring game. I lean New England and lean also Kansas City team total over.
Well, and obviously the tough thing there is New England's offense has not been good this season.
It hasn't. I got to think.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Brady, you don't think he's got one or two more games left in him? Maybe he's done.
Maybe.
I mean, he has to or they're dead. But, I mean, we'll see. I mean, oof.
Well, now you wonder, too. I mean, maybe this is kind of, simplifying the whole thing, but now that Buffalo's in striking distance, and Buffalo's kind of a fraudulent team anyway in the minds of a lot of people, does Brady in New England just kind of wake up now? You know what I mean? Like, they can coast to the AFC East. They've done it for, 18 years now in a row or whatever it is? They can coast to that division crown. Do they kind of wake up a little bit now? Have they been just kind of saving the Brady bullets a little bit?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to question Belichick. I mean, I do think he's still, I mean, and the trend lines are still there for him as good as ever, even against the number. Maybe they have. We never really are for sure know what the game plan is. I do know that their whole goal is to be performing at the highest level come January. So, I mean, if they lose this game, then they're starting to be in a tie with Buffalo. I know they got the 1-point win over them already. Yeah, I mean, there's starting to be issues here where they can lose control of even having the first round bye.
All right, one last game to hit on real quick, and I appreciate you sticking it out with me here. I know we ran really in-depth with the college football stuff, but always love having you on the show here, man. Seattle and the Rams, Sunday Night Football, 157-158. Flip favorite scenario. Seattle goes from a 2.5-point favorite to a 1-point dog now for this NFC West showdown.
I agree with the move. Bad number. I mean, we talk about the NFL, you know, market is, I agree, it's the most efficient market, but still there's mistakes, and you could have gotten this even on Monday, you know, the Rams catching plus points. I mean, to me, statistically speaking, the teams are almost dead even. It's just, you know, the Seahawks have been one of the most fortunate teams. Forget this season. We're talking the history of the NFL when you're 8-1 in games decided by 7 points or less. If you just knock it up a point to 8, they're 9-1 in games decided by 8 points or less. Statistically, they're equal. The Rams nearly beat Seattle in Seattle the earlier meeting. I like the Rams here.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's the story over there right now, man?
Yeah, just go to bradpowersports.com, and you can download all past issues of the newsletter if you want to check it out and see what I'm all about. I mean, there's only one last week remaining as far as college football goes, but you still got 4 weeks left in the NFL. And plus, bowl games. I put a star-rated pick on each and every one of the bowl games, 39 of them this year. And also, you got the NFL playoffs. If you want to get covered for every single football game played starting this week, starting tonight through the Super Bowl, you can check out the Powers Picks newsletter for $49. That's for the entire rest of the season. $49, BradPowerSports.com.
And, of course, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper, over at BradPowersSports.com, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Coming up on our Friday edition of the show, my Week 14 Westgate Super Contest selection segment. And then Brent with this week's version of the odds report, looking at sharp money in college football and the NFL here for this weekend. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.